Welcome back to Prime Your Midlife. This month, April 2024, is Stress Awareness Month. And with that in mind, I've collaborated with James Davis, half of the Midlife Mentors, to give you tips, insights, and strategies for managing your stress. If you enjoy this, then please share or like the show, and it'll help it spread the word to others. And thank you for tuning in, and let's get into the detail about managing stress. Welcome back to Prime Your Midlife, and today I've got a specialist with me, James Davis from the Midlife Mentors. And today we're going to be talking about stress and how to combat it, because it's Stress Awareness Month. And I think it's very clear that at the moment, stress is at all-time high across all demographics of society, but particularly, I think, for midlife men. James Davis, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I am also equally well. I know we've been just talking about the weather, which is such a British thing to do, but we're going to get into the detail. First of all, maybe some quick fire questions for you. And I always frame every conversation with the same one around this midlife crisis that I think society labels it with. Where do you sit on that? Is it crisis or something else for you when you're working with your clients in midlife?
I prefer to see it as the opportunity for transformation. And actually, if we look at the roots of midlife crisis and where that term came from, it's quite interesting. It was a psychoanalyst back in the 60s, I think. And he first gave a talk on it and then wrote a paper about it. And he was talking about looking at the road ahead and the inevitable decline towards death. He actually later on said that at that time, he did recognize he was actually a bit depressed himself when he came up with the whole idea of the midlife crisis. So it's interesting that we have that and we have all these like tired stereotypes around it, particularly for men. It's the, let's get the open top sports car and the younger model and all the rest of it. But I don't think those stereotypes are helpful now. We are in a mental health pandemic, I would say, across all age groups, but midlife men are being hit particularly hard. So I think one thing we can take from it is that midlife can be challenging for a variety of reasons that I'm sure we're going to touch on during this podcast. But there is also an amazing opportunity there to redefine yourself and your life and what you want to get from it, which is why I see it. I sometimes call it the second adolescence. It's a time to, think about what you can achieve and what outcomes you want and really see it as this time of transformation.
100% agree. It's kind of that little voice in your head going, something's wrong. Please listen to me. And it's not about riding a Harley or going out in your Porsche, exactly as you've said. It's about listening and then acting. We're going to help you talk about how you do that for your clients soon. But quick fire questions, just to put you on the spot a little bit, James. Do you think you need to answer yes, no, or maybe, and we'll then come into some of the further answers to that. Do you think men are good at being vulnerable, James?
No.
Okay. And in terms of your pessimism or optimism, do you think men's health is getting better or worse?
I'm going to go maybe in that because I think it's getting worse, but I think there are also hopeful indications as well.
So optimistic pessimism?
Yes, optimistic pessimism.
Okay. And is it ever too late to focus on getting better as a man?
No.
Slightly contentious one, this one perhaps. Supplementation. Fan, not fan?
Fan.
Okay. Interesting. Have you ever been at a time, James, when you've been stressed?
Yes, many, many, many times, Chris. I think stress is ever present in all our lives, right? From the low-level hum caused by these crazy devices we carry around with us that put the world in our pocket to the big life events that happen, like, separation, divorce, deaths of loved ones, illness, all those things. So, stress is something we all experience, and certainly I've experienced my share of it and continue to do so.
And help us understand the word andropause then and how that plays into stress-causing factors.
Yeah, so, thankfully, there's been a lot more promotion and information made available in the last 10 years, I'd say, about the menopause for women. What's not as widely known is that men can suffer from this condition called the andropause. So for women, their primary sex hormone is estrogen. For us, it's testosterone. And what happens is that will typically peak in our 20s, then it'll decline at a steady rate, 1 to 2% per year, which doesn't sound a lot. when you compound that, by the time you're hitting your 50s, your levels could be like 30 to 50% lower than they were. And of course, that has an impact, not just on us physically, but it has an impact on our cognition, our psychology, our emotional state, our drive, our focus. So it's possible that a lot of men out there that are in that age group are actually suffering some kind of effects of andropause, but just not being talked about or addressed. And why stress impacts on that is, it's quite interesting. When we're stressed, we produce the fight or flight response for a number of hormones via, but the main one that people have heard of is cortisol. Now, what's interesting about cortisol is it's made from the same mother hormone called progesterone. So if you imagine we've got progesterone sitting at the top of the tree and two arms going off from it, one goes down to cortisol, the other one goes first to DHEA, our youth hormone, and then to our sex hormones. So if we're stressed and we're producing more cortisol because of the stress, that means we've got less progesterone available to actually make our primary sex hormones. So like, you know, if our testosterone is low and we're stressed, we're actually making it go lower and lower and lower.
And is this counterproductive aspect of life a reason why you decided to coach specifically men in midlife, James?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I just feel there's such a need for it because the answers aren't out there at the moment. There's a lot of confusing information, misinformation. And the reason Claire, my wife, and I started Midlife Mentors originally was, you know, we were reaching that age ourselves, but we just saw so many, it was actually seeing friends go, well, you know, this is just it. I'm not really that happy in my life, but it's too late to change it. I've just got to accept, you know, low energy levels, expanding waistline, flagging libido. That's just the way it is. I'm like, no, look, aging is inevitable, but there's so much we can be doing from a lifestyle perspective to actually work against those things. And I think it's really important to say, you know, a lot of people are aware of maybe the physical stuff because we can feel it and see it, right? You look in the mirror and you go, oh, you know, I've put on more weight, or you know, my muscles have shrunk a bit. But these changes we go through have a psychological impact as well. So it's really important to work on our mindset and work on creating that's what I call a positive mindset, moving from obstacle to opportunity thinking. Because it can be very easy, especially with declining testosterone levels, to let low-level anxiety come in, which can then obviously lead to depression. And if we're not training our mind to think in different ways, then we're not going to change it.
Mm. Could you give us maybe some indications of what you're looking out for in terms of your stress indicators?
Mm. For me, I think because I've been working in this field, I'm quite well tuned into knowing when I'm stressed. And it's interesting because I think for everyone, we will have counterintuitive stress indicators. So it can be like, oh, I really need to focus on this. And I'll finally find that, oh, I'm kind of magpieing. I'm looking at the shiny new object syndrome. Like, what's a new thing to get my attention? I recognize that's a distraction technique from what's stressing me. But on the flip side, I can also fall into that thing of procrastination. Like, oh, I feel so stressed, I just don't want to take a step forward. So it's quite interesting, that duality of like, oh, the doing, but quite aimlessly, or the procrastination. And those are the biggest indicators I look for in myself. And I'm like, okay, what's the thing that I'm actually should be looking at here that I may be avoiding?
Mm. Just turning stress on its head a little bit in terms of testosterone, cortisol, fight or flight. I'm guessing that in some situations, stress can create action because we suddenly realize, I know, for example, if I'm going on holiday, the most productive day for me ever is the day before holiday, because I'm going, do that, do that, do that, do that. And I have so little procrastination and distraction because I'm so focused. So can we handle stress in a way that actually could be beneficial to us, James?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if people always ask me, like, if the stress is so bad, you know, why do we have it? Why has it been programmed into us? Well, you know, it was an evolutionary survival mechanism, but this is the thing. It was designed to last for a very short space of time to a physical threat. You know, when we have that fight or flight, our body's flooded with hormones. So basically it will do things like shuts down blood flow to anything that's deemed not essential at that time, like your digestive system, your reproductive system. It's great if you are going to fight that tiger or run away from that tiger. Not so great when it's just this constant jump, jump, jump. You know, our mind still hasn't developed to distinguish between that, you know, the angry email that comes in you've got to respond to versus an actual physical threat. Having said that, you know, stress does play a role because it's getting us to that performance place, right? So we have a bell curve for stress performance, and it'll be different for everyone, and different things will have different stress thresholds depending on your personality type. But essentially, yes, some stress is good, getting us to a performance level. It enables us to like be focused and go. But if we stay there too long, it's a sprint mechanism. If we stay there too long, if we're in the marathon doing it, then we start to deteriorate, our performance deteriorates, and eventually, you know, we could face burnout as well.
And what are the implications of that long-term stress on our bodies and our minds, and equally on the relationships that we have with important people to us?
Well, you know, they say stress is the silent killer, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. We know when you're in a stress response, think about it, it's when you're hyped up for extreme physical activity, right? It's when you're going to fight for your life, essentially. That's the role of the stress response. So your heart rate's up, your blood pressure is up, your pain receptors shut down, your serotonin levels drop. Like I said before, the blood goes from things that are deemed non-essential to actually surviving in that moment. So over the long term, of course, that's going on. It can lead to heart conditions, digestive issues, reproductive issues. That's the physical side. Cortisol also makes us put on body fat for some reason, particularly for men. We'll store it around the belly area. It will start to put us into what we call a catabolic state, where we actually start to break down muscle tissue. And on the psychological side, you know, research has shown that if we maintain a stress state over time, our neurons actually rewire. So that's our default state. And we get rewired to actually be programmed in a way to be more susceptible to stress and more susceptible to the anxiety that comes along with it. Of course, when stress is running, you know, our other neurotransmitters that are the feel good ones are depressed. So we start to feel more anxious and more depressed. So there are massive health, psychological, physical, emotional impacts of this.
Wow. Well, stay with us, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, because James has talked us there about all the things that could happen. And we are going to get to the gold of what we can do to try to eliminate our stress. So stay with us. But it's really important that we sort of go down this hole to understand why it's something that we can never overlook. But in the modern society, James, you know, we've got our phones, we've got comfort, we've got houses, we've got infrastructure, we've got more connectivity than we ever wanted through social. But what do you think is causing this rising tide of stress that's suddenly overlapping all of our worlds?
I think tech plays a massive role in it. And if you look, you know, I think about my timings, it's quite interesting. I think in 2007, we had the first iPhone, and it's also when Facebook launched. And I think, you know, social media and this always on device that's just so seductive, where you can peer into everyone's lives, has created a mental health epidemic across the board. You know, we know, like in the research, that children are being really affected by this. But I think it comes to all of us. So you think this has happened in tandem. We also had of course, Corona, the world shut down. That was a big existential threat to a lot of people. So our subconscious basically works on wanting us to feel safe and that the world is a certain place. And that was taken away. And then how do we communicate? Everyone was on social media, communicating through social media. And you're seeing the highlight reels of everyone else's life and thinking, oh, my life isn't so great compared to that person. But that person's not actually telling the truth about their life anyway. So we kind of get seductively drawn into this comparison game. And comparison is the thief of joy. And we lose focus on what our own values are and what our own goals and purpose are. And I think, you know, in tandem with that, like you say, there's a paradox. We're more connected than ever before. Yet levels of loneliness and reported isolation are increasing all the time because the physical real world aspect it seems to be declining. And yeah, there can be a positive side to social media. You know, you can join great groups, great communities and find your interests, but there is a dark side to it as well. And I don't think virtual communities should be replacing real world interaction.
Mm. And I know you do some of those so well at some of your retreats that we'll get to. From a perspective of midlife, we're stressed also because we're betwixt generations in terms of our parents, perhaps, and we've maybe got children, or, you know, we're losing people that we love, particularly we might be losing our parents. I've definitely lost both of my parents, and it became very stark to me of my own mortality when facing into that. Can you talk about how you find that stress for some of your clients in midlife that are finding themselves just bereft of time and everybody wants a piece of them?
It's so common. So the first thing I say is, like, you know, if you're feeling like this, you are not alone. It's what, you know, pretty much every client we speak to, prospective client, will say the same thing. And often, you know, people be like, there can often be a bit of shame and guilt around it as well. Because people are like, oh, my life's not that bad in the scheme of things, but I just don't feel happy or fulfilled. And it's just a nagging feeling something's wrong. But what we do is help people become more aware of it so they can have compassion. It's, you know, as you said, Generation X, which we all are, it's a forgotten generation, really. You know, the boomers were marketed to, the millennials are marketed to, Gen Z now. And we are a generation squeeze, right? I think we're the first generation in modern history where our living standards have actually got worse than the generation before. And it's this time of life, like you say, we're taking stock. We've got aging parents. Our parents may be passing. I'm very sorry to hear about yours, Chris. We're probably juggling like kids leaving school, college. We're juggling a relationship. We're juggling a career. We're juggling our finances. And I think it's also a kind of natural time where, because all these things are going on, we do stop and take stock. And you'd be like, am I where I want to be? And something I hear all the time is two things. It's like, wow, how did I end up here? I'm not even sure how or why I got here. You know, I just kind of followed this path and now I'm here and I'm not sure I really like it. Well, the other one is like, yeah, I've gone for this thing. I've worked all the hours, I've got to it, and now I'm here and I've got what I thought I wanted. I don't really want it at all. But that's fine. It's fine to feel like that. It's just what you do next that matters.
Mm. And you yourself, I think, had a little bit of a pattern interrupt. You were pursuing one path and then you decided this wasn't for you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I originally trained as a psychologist. So I've got a master's in psychology. But I went off into the world of journalism, bizarrely, after that. And then worked in media, essentially, in digital media, senior corporate positions, big multinationals. But in 2011, I just thought, yeah, I do enjoy this, but it's not really lighting me up. So I left and moved to Ibiza to set up retreats over there. But basically, at the time, retreats was kind of, they were all weight loss. So it's kind of like, oh, we'll get you, we'll beast you all day long, and we'll feed you rice and beans so you lose loads of weight. And then as soon as you go home, you put it all back on again. And I was like, well, let's reinvent this. I know what I've got for my psychology background. Let's put people in 5-star hotels. They've got everything they could want. Yes, there's healthy food, but also if you want to go and have a burger and a beer, you're going to have a burger and a beer. But we're going to give you nutrition workshops so you understand what's going on. We're going to talk to you about your mindset, your beliefs, where you're holding yourself back. So people come away with a complete toolkit. So that was really my step change, my pattern interrupt, as you put it. And it was a long, hard road, and actually cost me a marriage lots of money, but came out the other side of it.
But you also found Claire as a result of that. So, you know,
great things came out of it.
You connect the dots sometimes. But I'm just curious to go back to that 2011 transition. How long did you wait before you decided that you were going to then change direction?
Probably not long enough, Chris. with the gift of hindsight, I would have thought about it a lot more and planned it a lot more carefully. But at the time, I was kind of like, I was basically on a contract with MTV. And it's coming to the end. They said, oh yeah, we want to renew it, but let's keep you going. And I was like, well, actually no, I think I'm going to go and do this thing. So off I went. I didn't really think about it enough, I would say. So, and this is something we coach clients on, because sometimes people get in a position where they want to make a really rash change in their life, and it's like, okay, you know, let's look at the options around that, but is there a halfway stage in between? What's the safety blanket we can bring out? Because, you know, I'm not prescribers. You know, you get people out there going, never have a plan B. You just do, you just plan A and then you'll do it. Well, do you know what? Sometimes plan A doesn't work out, and then it is good to have a plan B. So yeah.
One of the first questions we talked about was, are men good at being vulnerable? And you were very emphatic. It was a no. Just can we talk about, if we're looking at somebody now and they're listening or they're watching and they're feeling really, really stressed, their cortisol levels are high, they're being distracted, they're maybe not sleeping, eating the wrong things, and they're just stressed. What would be your advice to them about being vulnerable about that emotion, James?
I would be honest and talk to those around you that care about you about how you're feeling. You know, and this is something I'm working on myself all the time. I think particularly, you know, for our generation, it was, you know, boys don't cry, you know, be strong and silent, sort it all out yourself. And so that's a pattern we carry through. And it's an admirable thing in one sense, but in another way, sometimes you need to be the flower and not the gardener. So I'd encourage anyone that's feeling like that, just open up, talk to your partner or even to a close friend just about how you're feeling. You'd be amazed. just expressing it can actually help lessen it. And then also having someone reflect back to you and kind of talk you through it can actually also take some of the pressure off it as well, where you realize the situation isn't maybe as bad as you thought. I say the other thing you can do, which I'm a massive fan of, if you're stressed and you're not already doing it, just start to move your body more.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us are missing the mind-body connection. You know, we lead such sedentary lives now with the way the modern world's set up. And many people just don't do anything. Listen, you don't have to go to the gym and do a prescribed workout. You know, just go and walk outside in nature. Just do something to move your body and you'll be amazed. You know, when we do that, there's a phenomenon in Japan called forest bathing. And they've done multiple studies on it. And they showed that even walking for as little as 15 minutes in a natural environment had a significant impact on lowering blood pressure, heart rate, and cortisol levels.
And why is that? Obviously, talk about movement and exercise there. Can you give us a bit more detail on why that's going to be so beneficial for us, for reducing that stress impact?
Well, yeah. So I think what happens is when we exercise, when we train, we actually produce feel-good endorphins, neurotransmitters that actually send a mood boost, which will kind of like helpfully kind of cancel out the cortisol effects, which are suppressing those down. So they do say exercise is nature's antidepressant. When we get out and we move more, we're going to produce more of those things. It's amazing studies in this. If we're exercising consistently, over time, even on the days we don't exercise, we'll still produce those feel-good neurotransmitters because the body is expecting it. Mm. So it's a great way to help alleviate stress, lessen the impact of cortisol on your mental state. I think also, you know, in evolutionary terms, it wasn't that long ago, like a couple of hundred years, we were living very physical lifestyles. We're simply not designed to be sat around. And that itself may be a stressor that we're just sedentary and not moving our bodies as much as we should be.
Mm. And if I'm going outside, would you advocate sticking my earpods in and listening to a podcast or music, or would I just be in the forest and being in awe of the surroundings that I'm faced into?
I think whatever works for you. What I would say to clients is like, be careful what you feed yourself. I'm not talking food. I'm talking about what you're consuming in terms of what's going into your brain. So yeah, it's not going to probably help so much if you listen to like some really angry music or a really angry podcast. There's something that soothes you, that works for you, do it. But I think there is also nice a point in your walk to just stop and take those out and experience nature, hear the birds singing, the wind in the trees and all the rest of it.
I love that. I'm going to just pause and reflect on that. Be careful with what you feed yourself, not just ingestion, but also noise. I think, mic drop moment there from James. Thank you very much. Curious to go back on the topic of supplementation in terms of masking some of the impacts of stress or feeling. You said yes to supplementation, and that made me curious. Tell us about the good and evil of supplementation, James, from your perspective of midlife coaching.
Yeah, so I'll start with the good side first. I think, you know, in an ideal world, we'll all be eating a rainbow of colors on our plate with natural foods for every meal. But of course, that is not reality. So we are going to be deficient in some nutrients. If we live in the Northern Hemisphere through the winter months, we're not going to have vitamin D because we synthesize it ourselves through sunlight. So there are certain elements. So when I talk about supplementation, I'm talking about minerals and vitamins that we should take. And we know there are certain ones, particularly for men at midlife, that are going to help. Things like, you know, zinc and magnesium, vitamin C, vitamin D, all these things will help support our hormone pathways and our overall health and our immune systems. I think on the side of supplementation I don't like is anything fatty. There's so many, you know, you'll see your feed will be full of like, oh, skinny sprinkles, like put them on your food and you won't absorb the it's rubbish basically. And so don't be looking for that stuff. Look at the solid things like your trace minerals, your trace vitamins. The only other thing I would suggest is like an adaptogen called ashwagandha. It's the only herb that does have a body of research around it, that it does help balance hormone levels and reduce cortisol in the body. But again, you know, you want to seek medical advice before you take that and make sure you cycle it, so you build tolerance over time. So you take it for a while, stop, take it for a while. If men feel that they are low in testosterone, you can go and get blood tests. You can get it done on the NHS or you go to a private clinic. And then you may, if your testosterone levels are low, feel that testosterone replacement therapy is something you want to go down. It's becoming increasingly popular. It does positively impact many men's lives, but I would say there are also a number of possible negative effects to it. So again, it's something you want to really think about carefully. And the main thing with that is, like, once you start that, once you put an extraneous hormone into our body, it shuts down your own production. So it's not, oh, I'll do it for a little bit and then stop. It's you're doing it for life or not. So that's a big consideration.
I wasn't aware of that, the fact that it literally, so it's like a statin, and that once it's something that's reliable on the heart system, then you've got to continue with it.
Yeah. I mean, you could do it for a little while and you would be able to come off and recover. But if you're in it for the long term, then yeah, effectively you'll have to keep taking it.
Okay. And you talked about, is it ever too late? So let's just say somebody sat there, they're 57 and they are on the scales of morbidly obese, they've got no energy, they can't lift themselves up easily now, perhaps on a pull-up bar, and they're just thinking, do you know what, I'm 57, I'm really not cut out for this marathon ultraman stuff and all these press ups and calisthenics, I'm just going to do one and just give into it. What's your challenge to that?
My challenge to that would be like, what's the life that you want to live for the rest of your life? Because yeah, the reality is, and we know this, if you do nothing, your situation is going to get worse. And this is what people overlook, right? They overlook the opportunity. Everyone gets hung up on like, what's it going to cost me to eat more healthily, to exercise my body? Oh, it just sounds too hard. Well, no, what's it costing you to do nothing and watch your health deteriorate? So it's quite an interesting thing we do. We often discount that cost, but it's the one we should be thinking of first. So I'd say anyone in that position, it's definitely not too late, you know, and do look ahead. Do you want to be even more obese in 1 year's time and more out of breath, and your quality of life has gone down because you can't move around so much and you've got more health issues? Or do you want to be slimmer, lighter on your feet, feeling more healthy? And then how do you adjust your lifestyle to get there? And it's, you know, you don't have to be going out and doing crazy events or running miles. It can be the simplest things you can do just to start making changes. Mm. But, you know, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So it's always comes back, what's the result you want down the road?
Yeah. And previously you talked about what works for you is important. It's not just having to do what social media and everybody says they're doing. It's just what works for you. And it's small incremental steps every day.
Exactly.
You talked about stress of exercise being fundamental. What else would you advocate to try and to do if somebody can't afford to go to Ibiza or they can't find an individual one-on-one coach, but they still want to serve themselves? What would you be advocating for that, James?
I would say have a look in your life at what your stressors are. Because again, we don't often think, we're just, it's like, oh, I'm just stressed, that thing. But actually take the time to reflect on like, what are the stressors in my life? What are the triggers that are making me go into that stress response? Now, which of those triggers could I remove? So a very simple thing, you know, with clients is like, you know, they've never curated their feed on their phone. They're just like, oh, you know, the same person, and it really winds up. I'm just like, just turn them off, get rid of them. And we can do that. We can start to limit our access to news, to, you know, to all kinds of things. So look at what's stressing you, and where you can remove the stressor, remove it. Where you can't, think about what your different reaction might be. So here's the thing, you know, it's not the event that makes you stressed, it's your reaction to it. And we do have the power to choose a different reaction. The thing is, we're creatures of habit, so we'll go on to auto default, you know, the same thing happens, we go into the same stress response, headless chicken running around, we feel terrible. But if we take a moment going, okay, that's happened again, what if I want the outcome to be this time? So what am I going to do differently to get the different outcomes? To do that, I'd say another thing people can do, but just generally, aside from exercising, is do you spend time in reflection? Again, I think it's a skill we've lost. We're so consumed by our devices now. Most people, I'm sure, you know, you're sitting there and you're bored, or you're waiting for someone at a restaurant. What do you pick up the phone? No. Why don't you just sit? We used to have something we called daydreaming, right? And I thought we'd call it actually, you know, active imagination or future visualization. Think about your goals and what you want to get from them and how you're going to get there. Use that time creatively in your head. Meditate, things like breath work are really good at helping bring stress levels down.
And is there a particular type of meditation or breath work that you really like?
Personally, no. Claire's really into her breath work. I don't do it so much, but I'll tell you a great place I go to is an app called Insight Timer, which is free. And there's loads of really good meditations on there for all kinds of things. You can do them from, I think, everyone like from 2 minutes up to like hours long. So you can, you know, I'll often start my day with one of those, like a 5-minute one, and just, you know, listen to the words and get me set for the day.
Okay, well, I'll make sure I put that in the show notes and also pick up that herb you mentioned beginning with A that I've already forgotten.
Ashwagandha, yes.
Put that in. What about your partner? Not necessarily Claire, but we'll just talk about Claire. And you can see that they're just as stressed as you are. They're showing all the signs. They're a little bit tetchy. They're a little bit angry. They're a bit snappy. They're maybe not sleeping. And you can see that they're just as stressed, but you yourself need some comfort. How do we play that game of tennis where we're trying to ace each other with our own, no, I'm more stressed than you, or no, I'm more stressed than you? What's the advice there, James?
My advice there is, I think people forget relationships have three parts, right? There's you, your partner, and the relationship itself is an entity. And we have to work and focus on the relationship as well. So in an ideal world, you're doing work to grow yourself, improve yourself. Your partner is, but you're also both focusing on the relationship. I think it comes down to communication, and it can be really hard. I know from personal experience, when you're both stressed, you don't want to talk about it, but even just saying, look, can we just take 5 minutes and just check in with each other? Because a big thing that happens in relationships is we'll assume what the other person's feeling based on what we observe. So we're like, oh, so-and-so, my partner's really stressed. It must be because of this thing. I'll try and fix it by doing this, but you've done completely the wrong thing. Ask them. It's a really simple exercise. Just sit down and go, hey, this is what I'm feeling today. This is what's going on for me today. This is the emotions I've got in play. And, you know, you can just listen without judgment and you understand then. We've got your understanding, your partner's telling you how they're feeling and what's going on for them. And then you can tell them the same. Even that can really help bring the stress levels down by going, right, okay, I understand that. And then you can come together and go, how are we going to address that? How can we help each other with this?
And going all the way back from a few minutes ago, you talked about the Ibiza transition you changed. And the phrase was, it cost me my marriage. What lesson could you look back to now if you were about to take that leap of faith and go into Ibiza that you could have done to be proactive about not having the consequences of that life change towards your relationship?
I think we want to be careful about trying to future-proof everything. I think life always has a capacity to throw us curveballs and give us the unexpected. But I think it's just doing your due diligence, right? If I'm going to take this next step, have I got a solid plan? Have I got it worked out? Do I know what it looks like in 3 months, 6 months, a year? How is that going to impact those around me? And have I talked to them about how it's going to impact? And what are the obstacles that may come up? And how are we going to deal with them when they do occur? That's the kind of thinking that people should be doing. So you're kind of just trying to prepare for the eventualities rather than coasting along and just seeing what happens and being reactive.
Hmm. We're talking about midlife and stress and lots of things you've already talked about there, exercise and getting off our phones and serving ourselves. And I love that. Be careful with what you feed yourself. If we're talking about the Midlife Mentors as a program, framework, website, etc., what would you be offering by way of small cost or large cost of ways that you could help somebody listening, James?
Yeah, so we have a number of free resources. So we've got our podcast, The Midlife Mentors, which is free and out there on all the podcast platforms. We also have a Facebook community where we go live every week and on a different topic. And people do Q&As on there. We drop loads of resources in there. So there's a lot of free stuff that we put out there. The next level up is something we have called the Midlife Boost, which is a 10-day program that will basically give you the basic tools that will help you navigate midlife more successfully, understand what's going on with your hormones, both men and women, understand how to deal with stress better, how to nourish your body better, exercise programs that you can do. And you get access for that for 30 days. And then we have the Midlife Reset, which is our 8-week program, which is more in depth. We take people through a whole process. It's delivered in our own app. It's around our pillars, you know, hormones and metabolism, accountability, emotional resilience, success mindset, movement, nutrition. So that's all in an app. Everything's scheduled for you. People find it great. You get videos of us. There's workshops in there. And then every week there's a coaching call. We do a group coaching call, and that's like hot seat coaching. You know, what's going on for you? And we'll resolve it there and then give people tools. And then I guess that above that, the immersive retreats we do, where we go to either Ibiza or Marbella for like a long weekend. And we're with people pretty much 24/7 doing the workshops, doing the coaching and having a great time.
And do you find it stressful to yourselves having to be so out there on, you know, camera, video, podcast, TikTok? I know you've got lots of channels, and there's this almost constant need to produce content, produce the next program, produce the next jaw-dropping moment on film. How do you handle that?
That's a great one. I mean, I'll be honest, if we could get away with getting rid of all our social media, we would, because it does take up too much of our time. I think we, Claire and I, have battled with it for a long time, and we've recently just come to a much better place of, I think, batch producing content, putting it out, and then just not worrying about it too much, because you can get very bogged down in all, you know, what's the algorithm doing? Oh, you know, and people tell you, oh, you should be doing this, should be doing that. And actually, you know, we're just like, hey, yeah, let's just step back from all that. Let's just like create a piece of content, put it up, and then walk away from it. I find that's given us a lot more peace, but we're still providing the value to people, but without worrying about where's it going, how's it trending? Because, you know, what do we want to do? Chris, we want to be coaches and help people, not be internet marketers that are spending all our time looking at this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what about the symbiotic relationship between each other? You're both working together, you're living together, you have a relationship together, you go on retreats together. How do you navigate the stresses of just the relationship dynamics of working and living together?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it was a steep learning curve, I think we'll say. You know, we each have got, but now we've reached a beautiful place. We know our individual strengths and weaknesses, and we play to those and divide the work up along those lines. But I think it's about having really clear boundaries on where work and personal life is. So, you know, we'll have like a shut off time, and then we're like, okay, we won't talk about work. We'll make sure we're still going on, you know, date nights. We'll be like, okay, you know, we're not going to work on this weekend. So it's just about setting those firm boundaries. And I think also doing lots of stuff together, but also having your own interest in doing stuff independently as well. That really helps.
Absolutely. And obviously, we're all changing. Claire's probably going through some changes herself, and having the boundaries and being willing to communicate and be, I think, just be curious about the fact that, okay, I'm in my lane, but Claire's in her lane. I wonder what it's like driving in that lane for a few weeks, and just let's talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes back to that, like having, we're very fortunate. We have a very honest and open, we talk about stuff all the time. So we're very open with talking about our emotion. Again, I've had to train myself more to do that, but Claire's helped me fantastically. But I think that's the key when you're in a relationship, to keep those channels of communication open, and actually, you know, have that ability to put yourself in the other person's shoes, what's going on for them.
So it's Stress Awareness Month, and one of the questions I asked you at the start was, is men's health generally on the incline or the decline by way of your optimistic thought? And I think you were optimistically pessimistic in that overall you hoped it was going up, but actually there might be a bit of decline on it. What do you think, honestly, about your thoughts about longevity, and not just longevity, but also good, healthy longevity?
Well, it's an interesting one there. I think unfortunately, men's mental health for sure is getting worse. I think that the stats bear that out. We know that midlife men is unfortunately the highest cohort for suicide. I think there's a variety of reasons for that we've touched on. You know, it's the kind of not being vulnerable, bottling everything up. It's maybe going through andropause and not realizing it. So low level depression, even like severe depression. It can be that thing that andropause can bring, like you maybe define yourself as a man in terms of your physicality, and that's fading out. It's maybe you're not as far ahead in life where you want it to be. So all these things are going on. I think the reason to be positive is there is more conversation around it. There are more tools and groups becoming available for men. But in terms of longevity, it's an interesting one, because we all want to live a long life. We want to make sure that life is a good quality life as well. And it is quite interesting. So I think like the data I've seen suggests that even if a generation's following us, millennials, their life expectancy is actually like lowering for the first time. So we're in this position where we have, you know, wonderful medical technology, and we have the ability perhaps to live a much, much longer lifespan. But it's about the quality of life that we have with that. I think it's our duty, and this is a big thing. I think in the UK, we have a real problem with this. Like, our National Health Service is an amazing institution, but it's geared as almost a nation mindset of like, oh, when it's broken, I'll get it fixed. Oh, so yeah, the doctor will see you and go, you know what? You're tipping into type 2 diabetes, your obesity, you do something. Well, you know, when it does become a problem, I'll just get it sorted out. And I think we need to start taking responsibility for going, well, actually, what can I do to kind of future-proof that? What's preventative steps I can take? Should I not have that second slice of cake today? Because, you know, I've enjoyed the first slice and that's fine, but I know the consequences aren't going to be good down the road. And I think we have to move more to that mindset of going, what can we do to live a healthier, more balanced life? I'm not talking about, you know, a monastic existence where we suddenly say, oh, you know, I'm not going to drink alcohol, because, you know, life's there to be enjoyed as well. There's no point like being miserable and living a long time. We want to be happy and have a good time as well.
I obviously look at your content and I watch some of your YouTubes and everything else. And the thing I'd like to just appreciate you for is that I know you're fit and healthy, but you don't try and portray yourself as the perfect specimen. I don't think I've ever seen your abs, not that I'm going to ask you to show them now, but there are some thought leaders or coaches that want to seem to show the flex of the biceps or the ripped muscles. And personally, I don't know, I don't think it's that great to portray this image of absolute ripped perfection, because to get to that, it's a lot of effort, a lot of consistency. Do you consciously decide not to show your abs? I'm not suggesting you're going to go on the next video and get your six pack out, but are you aware of how you portray your own messaging can have a negative or positive impact on the people that are listening?
Yeah, I mean, I think Claire and I always want to be honest and authentic in who we are, and it's like, yeah, we do enjoy exercise, we do like working out, but we also enjoy life. We'll also, you know, go to the pub at the weekend and have a burger and a pint, because here's the thing, life is about happiness as well as that. So the fitness industry has a big problem, so there are very few genetically gifted individuals that can look like that pretty much year round, but most of those people, right, they're going on a hardcore program. They're taking the supplements that I wouldn't recommend to basically get really ripped, and they're starving themselves. Then they will do a shoot over a couple of days in multiple locations, multiple outfits, and then they'll put that content out over a year, 2 years, going, this is attainable. I've done it. So my story in this is, you know, at the time I was going through my separation, I was in a bad way. I tried to get control over what I could by training really, really hard. And I got down to six-pack abs. Did it make me any happier? No. Did it make me more miserable because I was training really hard and restricting stuff? Yes. But people telling me like, yeah, the abs look good, but you look really ill in your face because you're really gaunt. Yes. And so I think for everyone, it's like, what makes you happy? I know for me personally, I call it the happiness window, right? I know what my fat percentages are, where I'm happy, where I'm not. You know, kind of post-Christmas, I'll be like, you know what? That's been a bit overindulgent. I will just dial back some of the foods I enjoy and train a little bit harder. But then, yeah, when I'm in a place that I feel happy with, I'll just stay there. And I think that's what we should all strive to, right? It's not realistic to expect everyone to be running around with like sub 10% body fat and abs. It's just not healthy.
Well, I agree. I'm not going to get my abs out, by the way, today either. They might just sort of come out as a barrel as opposed to washboard effect.
And by the way, Chris, there are things. Once your body fat gets pretty much below 10% and stays there, you actually start to impact your testosterone production as well in a negative way.
Well, I know when I did my Ironman, it definitely had an impact. I think my partner said, no more of those. Perhaps too much information there. Anyway, is there anything that we're just going to get to our three fundamentals of the three takeaways that you'd love to leave people with, particularly perhaps around stress or longevity? Is there anything that I haven't asked you, James, that you would be absolutely gutted to click off and not be able to share to the audience today?
I don't think so, Chris. We've covered quite a lot of ground there. So no, I think we're good on that. Yeah.
Well, I'm still living that sentence of be careful with what you feed yourself. It's going to perhaps be the headline for the podcast. Well, three fundamentals. Carry on.
Yeah, I was going to say it's so important because I always make this illustration to people. If we go back to when we were children, remember, people watched the news, right? You had the morning news, lunchtime news, the evening news. Some people watched all three, but that was enough. Now we have multiple 24-hour-a-day rolling news channels. You know, there's not more happening in the world. It's just like now it's this just noise thrust at us all the time. So that's why we have to be so careful to filter what we want.
Yeah, the news is definitely not on my phone, and I will choose to use it when I want. It's normally a time of a 12 o'clock check-in, never in the morning, never at night. I don't want to feed my brain or finish my brain with something that's going to trigger my anxiety levels. I totally appreciate what you've said there. Yeah. To finish off then, James, the three fundamentals, all of your experiences of working with so many men in midlife and couples as well, what would be your three bullets to say, these are the three things, if I had a choice, to do every single day or practice religiously to make sure that you had a long, happy and active life from here on in?
I would say educate yourself on how to move and nourish your body, because it's the only home you've got, right? And it's something like we all take health for granted till something goes wrong. And then we're like, you know, you do anything to fix it. And some things are jet accidents, you know, like, but there's so much we can be doing to prevent us getting sick and ill. So the one takeaway I'd say is like, educate yourself on that and follow it, you know, follow how to move your body, how to nourish your body correctly. And it will make a huge impact to, I think, every area of your life. Number one. Number two, I would say for men, do start to practice being more vulnerable. Do open up. You'll be surprising about the conversations you'll have when you know, certainly I speak to friends and then they'll be like, oh, wow, I felt so alone with that. And I think as men, we have a duty to actually, you know, embrace our brothers and talk about things more. And then the third thing I say is just remember to have fun as well. We can get so caught up in life and like all the shoulds and what I want to have. Just think back to, you know, we're not designed to be human doings, we're human beings. So just go back to like finding your fun and your joy and try and inject more of that into your life. And again, like the research shows, people do stuff that actually lights them up, makes them fun, they do tend to live happier, longer lives.
Well, James, I know you and Claire are very, very consistent on delivering value for people that are in all aspects of life, because your content is pretty ubiquitous so that it can serve many. But I appreciate you absolutely for the work that you were doing in this genre of life, which is the midlife part, because it is, as you said, the ONS statistics are just coming out. There are more people deciding to take an end of life strategy. And unfortunately, more of those are men, and especially more of those are men in midlife. So thank you for what you're doing to try to stop that rising tide of very bad statistics.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you for all the work you're doing as well.
Well, I'll finish as I always do, but I'm going to start it with, be careful with what you feed yourself, both in terms of what goes in and what goes in and what goes in. And remember, we have one life. So love life, living life. Thank you, James. Hey, well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. And like all episodes, I say to you, what is it that you can do today to take action on what you've just learnt and listen to, or perhaps you can share with somebody else? This has been your host, Chris Wilson, today, tuning in for another episode with you of Prime Your Midlife. And whatever you're doing today, have a great rest of the day.